A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel and his family landed at Logan Airport yesterday, and his wife had a deli sandwich in her bag. Pita, one slice of turkey, left over from feeding Ezra on the plane. At passport control, the officer asked about meats. She volunteered the sandwich. That single slice of turkey got them pulled into a full Customs and Border Protection agricultural inspection. Every bag scanned, an officer who seemed a little amused by the whole thing, and a lesson learned the hard way. Daniel's question is whether this was a one-off random stop, or whether there's genuinely no de minimis threshold for ordinary snacks, especially when you're traveling with young kids. And beyond the turkey, he wants to know what else these inspectors are screening for. Leaves, plants, the stuff that could actually bring pests or disease into a country.
The short answer is, no, there isn't a de minimis threshold, not really. And the officer's amusement probably just meant he was having a decent day. A single slice of turkey is enough to trigger the full process.
So a sandwich is a federal case, literally.
Literally. And the reason is that agricultural customs enforcement is built on a principle that's going to sound excessive until you look at what it's protecting against. The system isn't designed around what's likely, it's designed around what's catastrophic. One slice of deli turkey from a flight originating who knows where could, in theory, carry foot and mouth disease virus. That virus can survive in chilled meat for weeks. If it got into the U.S. livestock population, we're talking billions in losses and mass culling. The 2001 outbreak in the U.K. led to the slaughter of over 6 million animals. So the calculus at the border is, inconvenience one family, or risk that.
Which makes sense as a system design. But I'm trying to picture the actual pathway here. Ezra's leftover pita ends up in a landfill. How does foot and mouth jump from a trash bag to a cattle herd in Nebraska?
The concern isn't the landfill. It's everything between the landfill and the garbage truck. The sandwich gets left in a seat back pocket. A cleaning crew handles it. They touch a surface that contacts luggage. Luggage goes on to a connecting flight to a farming region. Or the bag gets tossed in an airport bin, a bird picks at it, the bird lands on a feedlot. These are low probability chains, but they're not zero. Agricultural biosecurity is fundamentally about closing low probability, high consequence pathways. The USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, APASETS, sets these restrictions based on exactly that math.
So walk me through the agencies here. Who's doing what?
Two main players. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, are the ones at the airport. They're the enforcement arm. But the rules they're enforcing come from AFIS, which is part of the USDA. AFIS does the science. They assess which products from which countries pose what risks, and they issue the regulations. So when you look up what you can and can't bring, you're seeing AFIS policy enforced by CBP.
And CBP has their Know Before You Go page, which is the traveler-facing summary.
Right? And it's surprisingly blunt. Meats in general are either restricted or prohibited depending on the country of origin. The rules vary by species. Poultry, pork, beef, lamb all have different risk profiles. But here's the thing most travelers don't realize. The default position is prohibition. You're not allowed to bring meat products into the U.S. unless there's a specific exemption. The burden is on the traveler to know whether their item qualifies.
Which Daniel's turkey slice did not?
Almost certainly not. Turkey products from most countries are restricted because of avian influenza and Newcastle disease concerns. Even if the sandwich was purchased in a country that has an export agreement with the U.S., the fact that it was a prepared open deli product rather than commercially packaged and sealed changes the risk profile entirely.
So the packaging matters.
Massively. Commercially packaged, shelf-stable, sealed products are treated differently than something wrapped in deli paper. Commercial processing involves inspection, certification, and tamper-proof packaging that reduces contamination risk. A deli sandwich has none of that. It's been handled by multiple people, it's been sitting at variable temperatures, and the paper it's wrapped in tells you nothing about where the turkey actually came from.
Which brings me to the thing I think Daniel's really getting at. The officer seemed amused. He processed a single slice of turkey. Was this a random stop that happened to catch them, or is the system actually designed to catch exactly this?
It's designed to catch exactly this, but the encounter rate is low enough that most travelers never experience it. When you arrive on an international flight, you fill out a customs declaration, or use a kiosk or an app. You're asked specifically about food, meats, agricultural products. If you declare something, you get flagged. If you don't declare and the officer has reason to believe you're carrying something, you also get flagged. In Daniel's case, his wife volunteered the sandwich. That's a declaration. CBP officers are trained to act on declarations. They don't have the discretion to say that's too small to worry about.
Even if they think it's silly.
Even if they think it's silly. The officer's amusement is a human reaction to the mismatch between the severity of the process and the triviality of the item. But the process doesn't have a triviality setting. There's no checkbox for just a little bit of turkey.
And the fines back this up. What's the penalty for not declaring?
Up to $10,000 for undeclared agricultural items. That's the civil penalty. Criminal penalties exist, but are reserved for intentional smuggling. The enforcement framework is built to deter non-declaration entirely. If travelers knew there was a de minimis exception, they'd test it constantly. The system works precisely because the rule is absolute.
So Daniel's wife did the right thing by declaring, and the system did exactly what it's supposed to do. Nobody made a mistake here.
Correct. The sandwich was confiscated and destroyed, the bags were scanned to make sure there wasn't anything else, and the family went on their way. No fine because they declared. That's the deal. Declare and we'll just take it. Don't declare and we can make it expensive.
What actually happens to the sandwich? Where does it go?
Confiscated agricultural items are destroyed, usually incinerated or steam sterilized. CBP contracts with approved disposal facilities. The sandwich doesn't go in the regular trash. It gets treated as regulated waste. There's a whole downstream infrastructure for a single slice of turkey.
There's something almost beautiful about that. A vast federal apparatus, billions in funding, international treaties, risk assessment models, incineration protocols. All activated by Ezra's lunch.
The thing is, that vast apparatus exists because the alternative has happened enough times to make it necessary. Citrus greening disease, which has devastated Florida's citrus industry, arrived on infected plant material, probably a single cutting or fruit brought by a traveler. The emerald ash borer, which has killed hundreds of millions of ash trees, came in on wooden packing material from Asia. The cost of these introductions runs into the tens of billions.
So the system is reactive. It's built on scars.
Entirely. Every major restriction you see is a response to something that already went wrong. The mad cow disease scare in 2003 reshaped beef import rules. The foot and mouth outbreak in the UK in 2001 tightened restrictions on meat products from affected regions. Avian influenza outbreaks led to poultry bans. The rule book is a geological record of past disasters.
Which means the traveler experience is shaped by events they probably don't remember and may never have heard of.
And that's the disconnect Daniel's experiencing. From the traveler's perspective, it's a leftover sandwich. From the system's perspective, it's a potential vector for a pathogen that could cost the agricultural economy billions. Both perspectives are valid. They just operate at completely different scales.
Let's broaden this out. Beyond meats, what else are these inspectors screening for? Daniel mentioned leaves and plants.
The list is extensive. Fresh fruits and vegetables can carry fruit fly larvae, which is why you can't bring that apple from the hotel breakfast buffet. Plants and seeds are regulated because they can introduce invasive species or plant diseases. Soil is a major concern. It can contain nematodes, fungi, bacteria. Even certain dairy products are restricted, though hard cheeses are generally fine and soft cheeses often aren't.
Why the cheese distinction?
Moisture content and processing method. Soft cheeses have higher moisture and are often made from unpasteurized milk, which creates a better environment for pathogens like Listeria. Hard-aged cheeses are lower risk because the aging process and low moisture inhibit pathogen survival. Same logic as the deli turkey versus sealed commercial product. More processing and less moisture means lower risk.
And what about things travelers wouldn't even think of? Souvenirs made from certain woods, or handicrafts with seeds.
Wooden items can carry wood-boring insects. Items stuffed with plant material, some traditional handicrafts, certain pillows or decorations, can carry seeds or pests. Even some animal products that aren't food, like certain leathers or feathers, can be restricted depending on the species and country of origin. CBP's agricultural specialists are trained to recognize all of this. They're not just looking at your lunch.
So the scanner Daniel's bags went through, what's that actually looking for?
It's likely a combination of X-ray imaging and, in some cases, detector dogs. The X-ray gives the operator a density map. Organic materials show up differently than metals or plastics. An experienced operator can spot shapes that look like fruits, vegetables, or meat products. The dogs are trained on specific target odors, citrus, apples, meat, and other high-risk items. Some airports also use advanced scanning that identifies materials by atomic number, distinguishing organic from inorganic.
So the officer wasn't just randomly deciding to scan their bags. The declaration triggered a protocol, and the scanner is part of that protocol.
Right. And the scanning of every bag wasn't necessarily about finding more turkey. Once a declaration is made and a prohibited item is found, the officer now has reason to check for additional undeclared items. It's not putative. It's the logical next step. If someone volunteers one prohibited item, the officer's job is to verify that's the only one.
Which is exactly what happened. And Daniel's takeaway is that going forward, they'll be careful about meat sandwiches. But I think there's a bigger question here for families traveling with young children. Snacks are survival gear. You can't reason with a hungry 2-year-old at 30,000 feet.
This is the practical reality that the rules don't really accommodate. Traveling with small children is already hard mode. The last thing you need is to lose your backup snacks at customs. But the system doesn't have a parent of young children exception, and it probably can't have one without creating exactly the kind of loophole that gets exploited.
So what's the workaround? What should Daniel and Hannah do next time?
First, finish or dispose of any fresh food before landing. If Ezra doesn't eat the sandwich, toss it before passport control. Second, commercially packaged, shelf-stable snacks are much less likely to be flagged. Sealed granola bars, packaged crackers, that sort of thing. They're still technically subject to declaration, but far less likely to be prohibited. Third, buy snacks after clearing customs if you need something for the car ride. Airport shops past the checkpoint are your friend.
And check the rules before you pack.
CBP's Know Before You Go page is useful. AFIS has a Traveling with Food or Agricultural Products page that gets into the specifics. It's worth 5 minutes before a trip, especially if you're traveling from a country with known agricultural restrictions.
Daniel's coming from Ireland originally, though he's based in Jerusalem now. How does country of origin factor in?
It's one of the biggest factors. The risk assessment is heavily dependent on where you're coming from. Countries with known outbreaks of foot and mouth disease, African swine fever, or highly pathogenic avian influenza face much stricter restrictions. The EU has had various disease events over the years, and the rules reflect that. The key thing is that the rules are origin-based, not citizenship-based. It doesn't matter what passport you hold, it matters where the flight originated and where the product was obtained.
So, a turkey sandwich bought in Dublin and a turkey sandwich bought in Tel Aviv might be treated differently.
They'd be assessed under different rules, yes, and the traveler is expected to know which rules apply, which, I'll be honest, is a lot to ask.
That's one of those things where the system's expectations and human reality just don't line up. Most people don't know the agricultural disease status of their departure country. They know they're hungry and they bought a sandwich.
And this is where the declaration process actually helps. If you declare and you're wrong, the item gets confiscated and that's usually the end of it. The system is designed to encourage declaration by making the consequences of non-declaration much worse than the consequences of declaring something that turns out to be prohibited. Daniel's experience, frustrating as it was, is actually the system working as intended. Declare, surrender the item, move on.
No fine, no penalty, just time lost.
And the time is the real cost. That's what Daniel's really asking about? Is this going to happen every time? And the answer is, it depends on what you're carrying and whether you declare it. If you declare, and the item is clearly prohibited, expect a secondary inspection. If you don't have anything to declare and you're not carrying anything suspicious, you'll probably walk right through.
Let's talk about how this compares internationally. Daniel mentioned he's originally from Ireland. The EU has its own system. Australia is famously strict. How does the US stack up?
Australia is probably the gold standard for strict biosecurity. They screen everything. They have detector dogs at every major airport. They'll confiscate an apple you forgot in your bag and fine you for it. New Zealand is similar. The U.S. is strict, but the enforcement is spottier. You might get through with something 10 times and get caught on the 11th. The rules are there, but the screening isn't as universal as Australia's.
Which creates this weird dynamic where the enforcement feels random, even though the rules are absolute.
That's exactly the tension. The rules say one thing, but the probability of being caught says something else. And travelers naturally calibrate to the probability rather than the rule, until they get caught, and then it feels arbitrary. But it's not arbitrary. It's just inconsistent enforcement of consistent rules.
And the inconsistency is partly a resource question. CBP can't screen every bag from every international flight. They use risk-based targeting.
Right. Risk-based targeting means they look at origin countries, flight routes, passenger profiles, declaration patterns, and intelligence about smuggling trends. A family coming off a flight from a low-risk origin who declare a sandwich might still get pulled, as Daniel did, but they're not the primary target. The primary targets are commercial smuggling, intentional concealment, and high-risk origins.
So Daniel's family was essentially collateral processing in a system optimized for bigger threats.
Collateral processing, I'd say. They weren't damaged, they were inconvenienced. And that inconvenience is the price of a system that catches the dangerous stuff. The question is whether that trade-off is worth it, and I think the agricultural data says yes, even if it's annoying in the moment.
What's the actual volume here? How much stuff does CBP confiscate?
CBP agriculture specialists intercept thousands of prohibited items every day across U.S. ports of entry. We're talking about tons of material annually, fruits, meats, plants, seeds. In a typical year, they conduct millions of agricultural inspections and issue thousands of penalties. The scale is enormous, even if any individual traveler's encounter feels like a bizarre one-off.
And behind each of those interceptions is a risk assessment. Some lab has determined that this particular pest from this particular region could survive in this particular climate and threaten this particular crop.
AFIS employs entomologists, plant pathologists, veterinarians, whole teams of scientists whose job is to model these risks. They look at the pest's biology, its climate tolerance, its host range, its reproductive rate, its known impacts in other regions. Then they assign a risk level and recommend restrictions. It's sophisticated science. The turkey sandwich is at the end of a very long chain of expertise.
Which makes the officer's amusement even funnier. He's the final node in a vast scientific bureaucratic network, and what it's delivered to him today is one slice of deli meat and a pita.
I suspect that kind of moment keeps the job interesting.
Let's get concrete about what travelers with kids should actually do. You mentioned finishing or tossing fresh food before landing. What else?
Think about what you're packing in terms of risk categories. Fresh fruits and vegetables are the highest risk. Just don't bring them. Meats and meat products are next. Same rule, don't bring them unless they're commercially packaged and sealed. Dairy is mixed. Hard cheeses are generally fine. Soft cheeses and liquid dairy are not. Baked goods without meat or fresh fruit fillings are usually fine. Commercially packaged snacks, chips, crackers, sealed granola bars are low risk.
And what about baby food? Formula? Purees? That kind of thing?
Baby formula and commercially packaged baby food are generally allowed, but they should be declared. The key is that they're commercially processed and sealed. Homemade baby food is trickier. It falls into the same category as other fresh food. For families traveling with infants, bring only what you need for the flight in sealed commercial packaging and declare it.
That's a useful rule of thumb. Commercial, sealed, declare it.
And if you're not sure about something, declare it anyway. The worst case is, they take it. The alternative is, they find it, and you didn't declare it, and that's when the fines come in.
So the system, for all its rigidity, does have a kind of logic. Declare, and you're safe from penalties. Don't declare, and you're rolling the dice.
That's the bargain. And it's a bargain that works pretty well for most travelers most of the time.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier. The historical incidents that shape these rules. Mad cow, foot and mouth, citrus greening. It strikes me that the system is always fighting the last war.
Inevitably. Biosecurity is inherently reactive. You can't predict which pest or pathogen from which country will be the next big problem. You can only look at what's caused damage in the past and try to close those pathways. The hope is that by casting a wide enough net, you catch the next thing before it becomes the next crisis.
But that also means the rules keep accumulating. Every outbreak adds another layer. Nobody ever removes a restriction once the immediate crisis passes.
That's a fair observation. Regulatory accretion is real. Once a rule is in place, the burden is on proving it's no longer necessary, and nobody wants to be the official who removed a restriction right before an outbreak. So the rulebook grows.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original question. Is there a de minimis threshold? And the answer is no. And there probably never will be, because creating one would require someone to take responsibility for deciding what's small enough not to matter.
And no agency is going to do that. The political and economic cost of being wrong is too high. Easier to process the turkey sandwich.
So the sandwich is the cost of doing business. Or rather, the cost of having an agricultural sector worth protecting.
That's exactly the framing. The U.S. agricultural sector is worth something like $1.5 trillion annually when you include related industries. The inspection system costs a fraction of a percent of that. From a pure cost-benefit perspective, over-enforcement at the border is rational.
Even when it feels absurd in the moment.
Especially when it feels absurd in the moment. The absurdity is evidence that the system is catching things at the low end. If it only caught commercial shipments of banned products, you'd wonder what was slipping through at the passenger level.
And speaking of the human side of this, Hilbert has a story.
I worked agricultural customs at JFK for 3 years in the 90s.
Of course you did.
1993 to 1996. Terminal 4. Before the renovation...
What was the job actually like day to day?
Mong, you're on your feet the whole shift. The x-ray monitors gave you a headache by hour 4, but you got good at spotting things. Apples look like perfect circles on the screen. Very satisfying, actually. Meats are harder. They just look like blobs.
Did you ever process a single slice of something?
I once confiscated half a salami from a guy who'd been eating it on the plane. He was very upset. Wanted to know if I was going to eat it. I told him it goes in the incinerator, and he looked at me like I'd insulted his mother.
What was the biggest thing you ever confiscated?
Suitcase full of cured hams. Italian guy, coming from Rome. 23 hams, wrapped in newspaper. He'd declared some meat on his form, and I opened the bag, and it was just hams, floor to ceiling. The smell was incredible.
What happened to him?
We took the hams. No fine, he declared. He kept saying some meat was accurate. I didn't disagree.
Daniel's experience. One slice of turkey. Officer was amused. That tracks with what you saw.
That officer was probably having a slow day. A single slice is a gift. You process it. You log it. It counts toward your numbers. Nobody yells at you. I'd have taken that over the ham guy any day.
Did the rules feel different then, compared to now?
The rules were the same. The enforcement got tighter after 9/11. More scanning, more technology. In my day, it was mostly visual inspection and a lot of questions. Now they've got the advanced imaging, the dog teams are better integrated. But the basic principle hasn't changed. If you declare it, we take it. If you don't, we might fine you.
Did you ever, personally, accidentally bring something through that you shouldn't have?
I brought a ham and cheese sandwich through customs in 1995 from a deli in Frankfurt. Forgot it was in my jacket pocket. Didn't realize until I was on the air train.
Wait, you were a customs inspector, and you accidentally smuggled a sandwich.
I didn't smuggle it. I forgot it. There's a difference.
What did you do?
Ate it on the air train.
You didn't turn yourself in?
To who? I was the guy you'd turn yourself into. I weighed the risks and made a decision.
The risks being foot-and-mouth disease, devastating American livestock.
The risks being a very awkward conversation with my supervisor. Besides, it was ham. Ham's lower risk than turkey.
Is that actually true?
I don't know. It sounded right at the time.
The system's integrity depends on people who, when they themselves are the breach, just eat the evidence.
The system's integrity depends on people who care enough to do the job. What they do with their own forgotten sandwiches is their business.
That's... I don't even know where to go with that.
Wait, asked?
He did ask. He did ask.
I did ask. Hilbert, thank you.
The ham was good, by the way. German deli meat. Different texture than what you get here.
Of course you remember the texture.
You remember a sandwich you weren't supposed to have.
Where does that leave us? We've got a system that's rigid by design, scientifically grounded, and enforced by people who occasionally eat the contraband on the train home.
I think it leaves us with a system that's more human than it looks from the outside. The rules are absolute, but the people applying them understand the absurdity. The officer at Logan was amused because he knew exactly what he was looking at. A parator didn't think about the turkey in the sandwich. He processed it anyway because that's his job, but he didn't pretend it was a national security crisis.
For travelers, the lesson is pretty straightforward. Know the rules, declare what you've got, and finish your sandwich before you land.
Or buy it after customs. There's always a shop past the checkpoint.
The question I'm left with is whether technology eventually changes this. If AI scanning gets good enough to distinguish a sealed commercial product from a deli wrap automatically, does the system get faster? Does the traveler experience improve?
Probably. But the fundamental tension won't go away. Biosecurity is about precaution, and precaution means stopping things that probably wouldn't have caused a problem. The turkey sandwich will always be in that category. Low probability, high consequence, impossible to ignore once you've seen it.
The next time you're packing snacks for a flight with kids, maybe glance at the CBP website. It won't make the rules less strict, but it'll save you the detour through agricultural secondary.
If you do end up there, just declare. The sandwich is gone either way. The question is whether you pay for it.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently has been a customs inspector, a sandwich smuggler, and an air train diner.
We'll be back soon. In the meantime, if you've got a weird prompt of your own, send it to show at myweirdprompts.com.
See you tomorrow.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.